This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we are going back in time a little bit when we were at the Trix Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, and one of the speakers that is who gave a presentation as well as a lecture and an excellent performance was Mr. John Graham. He was also voted as the most valuable performer of the weekend, and rightly so. I thought he did just a great job. He is a professional who some of you may or may not have heard of, or perhaps you saw at the 2023 convention of the Magi Fest in Columbus, where he was working with Ossie Wind. And they had a book called Between Friends, which I don't know, they must have sold 1,000 of them. I think everybody there must have bought a copy of that. Also, his book Stage by Stage is something that has been a sellout at conventions as well. He is somebody who is the real deal, who actually is out in the trenches and doing the work and is performing all over the place, most notably at resorts, which I think is kind of interesting. And we talked quite a bit about in the first part of this episode. But he is also someone who is quite willing to share the secrets to his success and the secrets to his secrets. And that is all revealed in Stage by Stage and in his book and his lecture notebooks. And so anyhow, he is a very great performer. I'm glad to call him a friend. And he shares some interesting advice with those who might be interested perhaps in going to work at resorts, as well as if you're going to be moving from close up to parlor or stage. He's got some ideas on that that are helpful, as well as just kind of your show in general and your business strategy. Anyhow, lots is packed into this 1 hour of episode here this week. So please welcome my friend, Mr. John Graham, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a performer and author and lecturer and general bon vivant, guy who gets around from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who is a magician that you guys may have seen, may have heard. If you haven't, then you should. And after you listen to this, you'll have made a new friend, someone you want to spend some time with. He is the author of the book Stage by Stage, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, which is a book that has received some of the highest acclaim from some of the most well-known magicians in our industry. And he has an amazing lecture, good friends with Ossie Wind. We'll talk a little bit about mentalism here. I'm sure we'll get into that as well. He is a very busy pro working with corporate audiences and also resorts, which I think is a fascinating end of magic that a lot of magicians have maybe overlooked. But I think you have again, we'll find a new friend and also learn some great business advice from a very creative magician and someone who is one of the underground guys you don't hear about a lot, but hopefully you will here in the future. He's been around for a long time. I mean, not like he's a real old guy, but I mean, he's got some real performing chops. Please welcome my friend, John Graham. How are you doing, John?
How are you doing, Scott?
It's great fantastic. To be here. I'm glad that you're here too. I'm glad we've had some time to actually sit down and start to chat about this. I was going to ask you about the resorts, because that's not something that is an area that I mentioned a lot of magicians have gone to. I mean, a lot of us have worked at resorts because companies will host their things, and so they'll bring magicians in like that. But have you actually worked for the resort and been paid by the resorts?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. A lot of family resorts, and in the Poconos back where I live,
sure.
Some couples resorts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of them wouldn't even do private events or outside events. It would be just for guests who want to come for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I started working probably over 25 years ago.
Hmm.
And then I started out doing close-up magic over the summer.
Yeah.
And then they said, we're going to keep this going. So then I started doing it year-round. And the whole time I'm looking at these nightclubs saying, I'd like to try to do a show here.
Yeah.
And little by little started doing the stage shows and then started doing those more and more. And then the close-up was like an extra thing that they said, we're going to cut that out and kind of save money. But the stage shows and the nightclubs kept going. So I was able to continue to work even when they kind of changed what they were doing.
John Armstrong has a lecture kind of along the line, I guess, of what the direction you have, and that is talking specifically about working close up like that and making the transition to parlor or stage. And it's sometimes you might think, well, it's easy just to jump on stage and now you're doing things up instead of on the table. You know, it's more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it doesn't have to be a hard process, but it has to be a thoughtful process, I think. Mm-hmm. Some tricks that you do close up will work on stage and some won't.
True.
If it's a trick like the anniversary waltz where you really want people to feel that card, that's not necessarily great for stage. But I've done a ring to wallet inside of an envelope on stage for hundreds of people without video support. Yeah, and not that they could all see the ring inside, but they know.
But it's the reaction, I guess.
Exactly, and it carries over to the whole audience.
Right. Well, that's a lot of it, I think, also, whenever that you feel as if you could have been that person who was volunteering on stage. Yeah. They just happened to beat me up on stage.
Yeah, you know, when you do the Bill and Lemon, you say, is that your signature? The audience can't see the signature, but that guy's reaction.
Right.
Yeah, they can identify with that. Exactly.
Guy Hollingworth had a great routine in his book, Drawing Room Deceptions, I think it was, in which you would have a drawing or a signature that you'd show one person, but it'd be a different signature.
And he hit it in the foreword or the introduction, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. With no illustrations. It was kind of the, you had to really read the book to find it.
But yeah, that was a clever idea.
Yeah, it was on a court card, so the signature wasn't exactly clear. And for that one person, they see the card that you showed them, but the audience assumes that's the card you showed them. I think that was pretty much the basis.
It's the premise of the thing. Yeah. But what you're doing is really their signature. I mean, we were recording this in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we're here at the Trix Convention 2024. When this gets released, it's going to be the next year. It'll be 2025.
Oh, wow.
So it'll be a while before we get this particular one released, and you'll be back out into the world and working some other new places, and it'll be the whole new year when people get to hear this. But first of all, say congratulations on being the most valuable performer in person here, that you won that award here.
Thank you. Yeah,
so that's another thing. I think people who are booking for conventions should realize he's not just good, he's great, because then the rest of the audience, I'm sorry, the registrants think so too. So congratulations.
Thank you. Flattering. I was not expecting that. I didn't even know that was a thing that they did. And then they just mentioned it during the show and I was blown away and flattered.
Yeah.
And really touched by that. That was really nice.
Yeah. Well, I'd voted for you. I really thought, you were well deserved. And part of the reason was, I believe, that you had fooled the magician so badly in your show, and then you freely give this in your lecture. Well, here's how I do it.
Yeah.
And they and that goes to what I was saying as far as signing the bill and everything, that it is a very clever idea as to how that the bill is signed and how the bill then ends up in the lemon. And myself included, going, well, there's no way. And then you never touch the lemon. It's like, wait a minute, he didn't touch that. He didn't get near that.
Yeah.
It was already in there, and that does match up. And everything about that was like, no way, no way. And and that was just one of the things. I mean, then with your torn, restored newspaper, that you hand out the newspaper, or the lassoed rope, and you hand out the rope. Do you intend when you build these things to be necessarily magician foolers, or
not at all? Actually,
okay.
My main thing, being a real worker and doing a lot of shows, is my intention is to make things practical and effective. Mm-hmm. And so the lasso trick, I don't really know where that came from. The magnetic version is practical and is effective.
Sure.
But somewhere along the line, I don't know how I thought of that, but it kind of came to me. The newspaper thing was a direct result of looking at that little packet of pieces, the torn pieces, and saying, if I could get rid of those in another way, I wouldn't need the pocket glued into this newspaper.
Sure.
And then I realized, well, if I didn't have the pocket, that means the newspaper is ordinary. And if it's ordinary, that means I can give it away at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real plus for me. And then it becomes, you know, you can prepare it in 1 minute without any glue or rubber cement. And that's a real plus when you're working.
Yeah.
Because it's always when you prepare the newspaper and now you have a show, and the newspaper tears, like right before the show, and you don't have 20 minutes to prepare another
one.
And so in this case, you don't need that.
You rock my world. I mean, I love that idea. And I've been doing different variations. And the one I've been playing with most recently that I really like was Fielding West's version of that, that he's been doing for a long number of years. And I spent time at his house and we put this thing together. And I know all the ins and outs and love that and been doing it. But then this just takes it to a different level.
Yeah.
And all explained in the book stage by stage.
Correct.
So, I'm really getting far ahead of myself. I want to go back to resorts again for just a minute, because I still find that fascinating when you say doing close-up. Was that close-up for corporate shows then, or were
was for the resort
guests. For the resort itself, and you were saying. So were you working in the restaurant?
The dining rooms and in the lobbies while people were checking in and waiting around for the room to be ready.
Yeah.
And I've done restaurants at the same time I was doing the resorts. So I've done a lot of, I used to work in restaurants 6 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many hours a night? 2, 4?
Sometimes mostly 3, I think, at that time. These days I would do 2 if I were to do it at all. But I remember Saturdays, my schedule used to be, I would drive 30 miles to a resort and go from 9:30 a.m. till 11:30 a.m. doing close-up magic in the dining room. Now,
for
that
breakfast.
Seems early. Yeah.
It does seem very early, yeah.
At a resort, everybody's there to have fun. And
you're getting ready to go out to the pool for the day or go play golf or do something else.
And they're just in that resort frame of mind. They're not just, let's go get breakfast and then go somewhere else.
Being in a resort frame of mind, number one, they have more expendable income, I guess.
Yeah.
Do they tip, or do they feel like, this guy or not? Or this seems strange, because that's not something that, I mean, I don't see magicians working resorts, and I've been to a lot.
Mm. Yeah, some people would tip, some people wouldn't. I never wanted to chase the tips, because I want people to enjoy it without feeling like, oh, now what do we do?
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't mind accepting a tip if somebody offered it, you know, and there's both. There's half and half.
Okay.
As far as people.
Did you find that it was, when you say it was half and half, I mean, was it something that the hotel felt like you could depend upon, you should depend upon part of your income as tips? Because I know a lot of times with wait staff, they will pay them less thinking they're going to make it up in tips.
No, they never made that with me anyway. I think that a lot of resorts are doing it now, even to the point where they might have a band or a duo who they let put a tip jar out on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then people request a song and maybe leave a tip if they play it or something.
Yeah.
That seems odd to me, to be honest, that a resort would do that. If it's a bar and it's not a super elegant place, it seems a little more acceptable.
Yeah, Ramada Inn or somewhere.
Yeah, but you're a resort and people are paying good money to come
there. Exactly. That's kind of my point. I think that should be assumed to be included with the rest of the rates. I mean,
absolutely.
Obviously, I'm paying for food, but I shouldn't be paying for the entertainment, whatever that might be. I'm paying for the band or the magician or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was doing a show for a company in Chicago one time, I found the hotel actually had a house magician, not unlike what you were doing, apparently. And I talked with the guy because he came in and he just introduced himself and he saw that I was working. And I said, I apologize. I didn't know that they actually had somebody. He said, no big deal. He said, I get paid one way or the other.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was going to ask you is that because he was getting like a 401k and insurance and everything. And in this particular case, he said, because the hotel chain did not have a position for a magician, particularly as far as a title, and for what he was being paid, they had to call him like head bartender or something in order to be identified in their system, for HR. But he was getting everything. So were you just a contract laborer, basically?
Yeah, like an independent contractor.
That's what I mean.
You know, call me what you want if you're giving me,
just pay me,
a 401k and health insurance and things like that. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What a deal that must
But you
have
weren't
been.
Getting anything like that. You were just, again, being an independent
just
contractor.
Just an independent contractor, yeah. Which was fine. You know, we pay our own taxes and that's just the way it goes with every gig that we have.
Sure.
It's not just in resorts.
Sure.
You know?
It's like working in a restaurant.
Yep.
There was a place that I worked for a while, and I used to get nachos at the end of the evening, and I would pay the same price that the wait staff would pay, which is half price or whatever for food items.
Yeah.
And after about a year, because I was doing it like every week, I had the best nachos I've still ever had in my life in this place. Anyhow, one of the owners had come to me and said, well, you're really not a wait staff person. You're a contract laborer, and we'll give you a discount, but not the same thing that the rest of the people get, because we are paying you more than the wait staff gets.
True.
So if you're getting more than them, you should be able to pay for this. Maybe not the same level, but we'll give you 10% off instead of 50% or something. It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
I said, I didn't mean to take advantage, but it's different how that when you are working as a contract laborer, you should recognize what your position is going into it. And I'm just saying for people who, whether you work in restaurants, resorts, or wherever, kind of be clear, I guess, of what's...
I agree. And you don't also, you know, suppose you're doing an event and they tell you, you know, at our event, we want you to come and we want you to enjoy yourself, have a drink or have a meal, but you don't want to show up and be the first person at the bar getting a drink.
That's true.
Because they're looking at you like we're paying this guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the resorts that are saying things like, well, we'll give you a discount, but not as much of a discount. And yeah, we don't mind it. We're willing to pay. But at the same time, now imagine the resort that says, your meals are covered. If you want to have a drink, it's covered.
Yeah.
Do you want to stay over? Do you want a room? We got you. So now you want to do a great show for them and mm-hmm. for their guests because they made you feel really great about yourself.
Right.
They value you.
Right.
So I think it's to their benefit to give you a meal and not make it such a strict thing. But I do get the point, you know, our wait staff is paying and you're making more than them. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, there was one resort where I was working and to the point where the person booking the entertainment would say, why don't you come up and see a show and come up, bring someone with you and have dinner. And if you want a room, we'll get you a room mm-hmm. on a night that I'm not even working.
Hmm.
And now what does that make me want to do? It makes me want to go in and do the best show
that's true
I can for them, you yeah. know?
Because they place value on you.
Yeah. And you don't mm-hmm. feel resentful. Even in the back of your mind, even though you don't mind paying, you don't mind the money, but it's like, how am I being treated? You
know? Right.
And we're not divas. I mean,
right.
I want to go in and demand a bunch of things. I'm happy to be working.
Right.
You know?
I think that is the attitude, John, whenever you, whenever we do magic for anybody, you know, whether it's private or corporate or whatever, from the standpoint, I'm going to be the easiest person you have to work with.
Absolutely.
You know, in every case, I'm going to under-promise and over-deliver.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes you'll see an event planner and they're stressing out. Maybe sure. when they're booking you, I called a few people, no one got back to me or they're out of my price range and I don't know what we're... And if you could set their mind at ease right then, that's really nice. And also it's not their job to worry about us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get there, say, oh, this room is not right. The angles are not good. Where's the sound system? Well, now you're adding to their stress.
That's true.
Like you said, let's be the easiest person. That guy came in. He did an amazing show. Everybody right. loved it. And he looked professional. He was, you know, honest and genuine.
Right.
Why not?
Right. What would be your recommendation for people who are interested in going to work at a resort? How would you go about knocking on the door and talking to the right person? Who would be the person?
Good question. It's tough. It's tougher now, I think, than it's ever been because I feel like people running the resorts and running certain departments weren't really hired to do that. That was kind of added on to their workload.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have somebody who's maybe an activities director at a resort who doesn't know entertainment.
Wow.
And they might not even come to your show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a way, I like that. I like when I do the show and nobody who works there comes because I feel free to be my true self and just yeah. do what I do instead of worrying, oh, are they going to like this? Are they right. going to like that?
Yeah. Should I say this joke or is that going to
Yeah, is that going to offend them yeah. and I'm not going to work anymore?
Right.
But I love the... you know, the people who will come to the show and talk to the guests and get feedback. So I would say if somebody really wanted to break into a resort, try to talk to the right person, like the activities director mm-hmm. or activities manager, and say, look, I'll come in. I'll do my show. I'll give you a free night. Bring your guests, but I want you to come to the show too. And now it's also if they have a need, because they often don't have the budget. I was yeah. working weekly at several resorts. And then a lot of places now they do things on a monthly basis or every 2 weeks or something like that. And they'll do things more now like campfire marshmallows or something.
Okay.
Or we're going to do this. All these things that their regular staff can handle and do. And then a show is a special occasion.
Right.
So I wouldn't mind giving somebody a free night as long as they would come to the show. But it's hard. Because, like I said, the people running it are not they're not really in the job of entertainment director.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the job of, okay, you're like the activities manager. You're going to run the bingo game.
Big difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Shuffleboard,
right.
whatever it
yes.
is. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't know about booking human beings, I guess.
Exactly.
And dealing and with personnel issues. Yeah. What's
you
quality?
Know, what is a good show and what is a okay show.
And if they have no basic comparison.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They know what a good piano or a bad piano player sounds like, or a band or something, or a wedding band or something. But magicians, like, I don't get it. You
know? I know.
And then you start doing mentalism. It's like, what?
It's a whole different thing. Yeah, exactly.
It's a different thing than do, you know? Wow. So, and speaking of the Poconos, you were saying where you were working, I always think, of course, of the Marvelous Maisel TV series or Dirty Dancing. I mean, that was something that is no longer as popular, or it's not the same as it was, I guess.
Correct.
But are you saying that there still is a market, at least that you found a little bit in there?
A little bit. A lot of the resorts there are more family resorts now.
Okay.
And there's definitely
people
market
from
for
the
that.
City who come in, I guess, like they did before.
From New York, from New Jersey, even from further away than that.
Okay.
And a lot of these resorts are very popular, you know, and they get ratings that rival Disney's ratings.
Wow.
But those are the family resorts. And I think that's the direction everything kind of goes in. People, your kids determine where you're going to go to eat when you're going to go out to a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And so the couples resorts, I feel, are not as popular as they once were. They used to be, it was a real thing to go to the Poconos.
I think it's still popular for like Sandals, you know, resorts and those things that are on islands. And
yes, of course.
For couples retreats and things like, maybe not so much in the U.S., but if you're going to be going to a resort destination that you fly to from the U.S., I think there are opportunities perhaps to work in those places.
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
During the daytime, they're going to hang out at the beach or at the bar or golf course or whatever. But in the evening, I think after they wash the salt from their hair, I think they want to just kind of chill and see a magician.
Absolutely. When you're doing magic in a restaurant, it might just be a off the road, off, you know, not a main restaurant, not a very great restaurant even. But you might be able to get a gig there, and that's great. But it makes approaching every table a lot harder because they didn't know there was a magician there that night. Now, when you're at a resort, everybody's there to have a good time. You tell them you're the magician. They used to sit with people they didn't even know. Some of them still do.
Right.
And now you can bring that whole group together and get them talking to each other now. So you do a few minutes of magic, and then you leave, and now they're talking to each other. How did you do that one with your ring? Did you see this? I saw a guy once who did something, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we really do.
It sounds like you're pitching for weddings, because the big thing, with weddings, which you have disparate groups getting together of different ages and families and whatnot who don't know each other, and you're trying to blend them.
Yeah, and the people who maybe they aren't dancing. The band might be great, but they're just not dancers.
Good point.
And you could always spot those people. Those are the ones that we want to approach.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't need us. You know, you could see the tables having fun talking. Okay, I'm going to let them do their thing and I'll do my thing for somebody else.
You and I have done this long enough in which that we have that experience. But someone who is just getting into that, what advice would you say as far as approaching tables if you are new to the strolling business? And because once you're doing cocktail parties, it's the same kind of thing. When you're going, particularly corporate groups, and people are involved in conversations about business, or it could be about, I don't know, maybe someone's hitting on the secretary, you know, or whatever. You don't want to interrupt certain conversations. What advice would you give people who are kind of new to corporate strolling?
Yeah, I would say it sounds weird, but you don't ask. You don't say, I'm the magician, can I show you some magic? Because it's very easy for them to say, no, thanks, not right now.
Yeah.
So you still have to be polite though.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I've been hired to walk around and do a little magic for everybody. I'd love to show you something, you know. And now you could say, if it's cool or if this is a good time, you could kind of sort of ask, but not directly ask.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be friendly about it. You also don't want to come and say, hey, I'm the magician, pick a card. You know, you want them to know that you're a nice guy too.
That's right.
You know? So I think just don't really ask permission to do magic for each group. And it's a bit of a grind. It's hard to do because you are approaching people and they are having a conversation. Think about that. They're talking about something and you're walking up to them, oh, you're talking about something, you're having a conversation. Well, we're going to do magic now. Like, what is that?
Yeah, what I have to do is more important than what you're talking about.
Yes, and you've been hired to do it. That's why stage shows will spoil you after a while, because now you do your one show, you break the ice one time, and also everybody's expecting the show. They know what we do. When there's a show, we kind of sit here and watch and engage and get into the show. People don't really know what to do when a close-up magician comes up to them.
Yeah.
I've been thinking lately, an approach might be, why don't you walk into an event and walk around the whole event and talk to everybody? introduce yourself. Hey, I'm the magician. Just letting you know, I'm going to be walking around later doing some magic. I'd love to be able to show you some. So now when you do approach them later on, it's like, oh, hey, the magician's back. Let's see something. Now they know you. You broke the ice already. You don't have to break the ice and then go right into performing. And also, I like the idea of you being that guy walking around that event and everybody's noticing you. Who's this guy? He's shaking hands with people. Seems friendly. He's saying hello to people. Does that guy own the place? No.
Mm-hmm.
He's the magician. So I haven't done that, but it's an approach I might try.
I would think if you do say, well, I'm the magician, I'm going to come back a little bit later, then a lot of times people will say, well, can you show us something right now? Of course, sure. I guess you can.
Yeah, then you can.
But
yeah.
But that's not why you're there. That is an interesting idea and approach in which that you would get around. And yeah, it's like, who is that guy?
A little bit. Yeah, you're already creating a little interest.
Uh-huh.
People notice you, but it's still, you are still talking to people you don't know. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't go to a party as a guest and walk around and introduce myself. You know, sometimes have you ever been doing a show and everybody's enjoying it and you're in your head, you're thinking, I'm not this person. I'm not this outgoing guy who loves to kind of bring people together. Like, but that's what I do when I do the show. But
yeah,
that's not who I really, really am, you know?
Well, I think it's, you should appear that way, certainly.
Absolutely.
As the most entertaining person in the room, because yeah. You should be the quote life of the party, because you're bringing yeah. life to the party with,
sure.
with what you're doing. So you have to have that. I mean, you can have a different personality or, you know, something at home or, you know, in private, but when it comes down actually that you're going to be paid to be Mr. Congeniality,
yeah.
then you have to recognize that that is why you're there. And so, okay, so I like that. And that's a different approach, certainly. So what about when you're on stage? What would be your opening? What do you do in order to engage the audience? Because they're sitting down. It's like, okay, magic boy, you know, what
yeah,
do you got?
Let's see what you got.
Yeah.
Well, I think the main thing is to have control of the room before you go on stage.
Okay.
So when you give somebody your intro, you say, don't say anything. Don't bring me up until the room is under control.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are running up to the bar for one more drink or people ran outside, and you can make announcements, say, okay, 5 minutes until showtime. They don't even hear it. They think that means we have 30 minutes.
Yeah.
No, 5 minutes. And it's hard to get people situated and mm-hmm. settled. But once they are, now it's much easier for you to come out and do your thing. And I just like to get to the magic right away. So whether it's with a Nielsen bottle vanish, or my final sale trick with the price tag.
Right.
Just something that gets to the magic right away
mm-hmm.
and breaks down, you know, any barriers or apprehension that the audience might have about what type of show this is.
I had a tip from Doc Hilford many years ago, which I haven't used, but I don't know why I haven't tried this. And it gets the audience's attention to know something's happening. And that is, like, yeah, 5 minutes before your show, you have full house lights.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually it's dim, people are talking and there's a hubbub and they're eating or drinking or standing in line to get another drink or whatever it is. But if the house lights come on, that usually means, hey, it's time to go home, or what's the last call? What's the deal?
Yeah.
And that gets people's attention. It's like, you know, clinking a glass basically. Mm-hmm. And then an announcement could be made. Please have your seats. The show will begin in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So, I like that idea.
As opposed to having someone make an announcement and they can't hear.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because visually it just gets your attention. Just an idea for people who are listening, you know.
Great idea.
Something to give that a try. So in your book, Stage by Stage, you do talk about making a transition. What are some tips that you would give to people who are thinking about going from close up to stage? Because you can certainly earn a much better living and higher revenues.
Sure. Higher revenues. And also you're able to offer your clients something that not everyone can.
Mm-hmm.
Most magicians are close-up magicians, but now imagine if you can say, we could do close-up, we could do a stage show, we can mm-hmm. do both. That's something that not everyone can. I remember a friend of mine had an event that he couldn't do, and he had to cancel, I think. He might have double-booked himself. So he asked me if I could do it, but I was booked.
Mm-hmm.
And then we really struggled about who do we call, who's going to be good enough to cover this show, because it's a stage show.
Yeah.
Now, if it was close-up, we could name 100 people that would be able to do it. So I would say some tips would be to, you know, start with the close-up magic that you already do, that you already know, that you already perform, and see what you can do that you already do on close-up, what you could do on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go from 4 people to 500 people. But if it's a corporate event and there's 110 people, say, they can see some close-up magic, as we just mentioned before. They might not be able to see the actual ring inside the envelope or the actual signature on the bill inside of a lemon, but that's the type of magic that they can understand and at least get. And mm-hmm. now you can perform something that you've done thousands of times in your close-up gigs. And so when you get on stage and you might be a little unfamiliar with the situation, you can perform something that you've already delivered hundreds of times. And the audience can sense, okay, this person knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's that confidence and competence that they can sense and understand.
Right.
So I think that's a great way to start. Start with what you already have, with what you already know,
mm-hmm.
and just build up from there. And the magic doesn't have to be big. As you mentioned in the lecture, I showed the audience, I said, everything I have for the lecture, everything I did in this show fits in this little box, which is the box I use for the Bill and Lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, you don't need big props. You just need the right effects and the right routines mm-hmm. to carry across to the audience. But start with what you already have. You don't need that $2,000 electronic marvel that, oh, this would be great for my show.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that one certain book. This contains the material I really want to use. You have what you already need mm-hmm. to get started. So use what you have.
And what about your personality, trying to find that on stage? Would you say that that should be a larger, more inflated version of yourself or,
probably.
Or a character? Or what would you?
Yeah, I would say the way to get to be your true self on stage, which is what the audience wants. They crave authenticity
mm-hmm.
more than anything else, in my opinion. There's a person behind the magic, and they want to know that person.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to see some genuine moments, not just the fast talking, check out this lab, make sure there's no trapdoors, mirrors, hidden compartments. Blah, blah, blah. People don't connect with that. You know, they might be entertained enough, but they want to connect with a real person. And the way to be yourself is to do thousands of shows
mm-hmm.
to the point where you don't have to think about what comes next or all my props where they need to be. What do I say when I do this? You're not even thinking about the method to the point where you can almost forget that you're even doing magic.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, be your true self by way of doing so many shows that you can be your true self.
Right.
And that's what the audience wants. I was doing a show once. It sounds like a weird story. It's not like a big deal, but I had this little girl on stage and she was really nice. She had this brightness about her and she was about 10 years old and her name was Tess. And so then later on, after she was done with her segment in the show, we were doing something else. And I said something about the kids in the audience and some kid yelled out, "Hey, kids keep you on your toes." I said, "Yeah, kids remind you to not have kids." And that got a laugh. And then I said, but you know, and I wasn't even thinking about it, but I just said, I said, you know, to be honest, but if I could have a daughter and she was like Tess, I would be a lucky man.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience applauded.
Hmm.
And I didn't even think, I wasn't trying to say something that was emotional or meaningful, but they knew it was sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they really crave and what they really want.
Wow.
You know,
you created a moment there.
Yeah.
And you've hit upon a point over there that a lot of times there'll be something, it will be a line, someone throws you from the audience or, you know, later you say, what was that thing? You want to make sure that you do that again, or particularly like that in which there is a moment. And do you try to recreate those things that work?
Yeah, not in that particular case.
Okay.
But you know, when you get that great laugh, you're like, I got to remember to say that again.
Yeah.
Or somebody says something in the audience mm-hmm. and now you're going to say it in your show.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do love those little moments that you find from doing the show. Oh, I have to keep that in.
Yeah.
And keep those moments. Yeah.
But have you ever had something, again, like the test situation where you have tried to force that line into another volunteer you've had?
I haven't with that particular situation.
Okay. Okay.
But I do know what you mean. Like Paul Gertner in his show had this really nice line that he said, and I'm sure you heard it and you'll remember when I say it. And it's right at the end of his show when he talked about, you know, my father worked in the steel mill
right. In
Pittsburgh and his father worked in the steel mill. And so I was destined.
He said, right now I should be.
Yeah, I should be there.
Mm-hmm.
But because of what my father did for me, I can do this for you. And he did his routine. I thought that was a really nice line. So
mm-hmm.
he might have written that. He might have said it and then scripted it a little bit
genuine.
Better.
Yeah.
And so those are the moments that you could add to your show and keep in your show.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice
moment. I think the audience, you're right. You do want to be authentic and you want the audience to know something about you. And whenever I have over the years been injecting things about my life in there, I find that people say afterwards about how much they enjoyed the show. I like this, that, or that. But I was sorry to hear about your wife passing, you know, or something like that, because I would say something and that they people can relate to. So they'll tell me their stories, you know. Yeah.
And even if you mention it in one or two sentences, you might say, you know, hey, how you guys doing? I've been doing magic all my life. I wanted to show you the first trick I ever learned. And then you do the Nielsen bottle or something. Well, that connects with people. They're always listening and they're always processing what we're saying. So then after the show, somebody might say to you, that's amazing. You've been doing magic all your life.
Yeah.
And you just thought it was a throwaway line.
Yeah.
But that's the part they connected with and held on to. So we have to be sincere by, you know, the audience. How many times have you had people ask you, how did you get into magic?
All the time.
How long have you been doing magic?
All the time.
How do you learn magic?
All the time.
Who are your favorite magicians?
Yeah.
So why not incorporate those types of questions into our shows?
Sure.
So we can give the audience that genuineness.
Yeah, that was one of the tricks I used for a long time. It was about... Oh, I forget what you call the trick, but it was where that I would do some pre-show to begin with and have someone say, all I want you to do is just to say Harry Houdini. And then you show these cards about, you know, here are some of my favorite magicians, or, you know, Siegfried and Roy, or Chris Angel, you know, and David Blaine. You show all these cards and everything, and then Scott Wells. And then, you know, turn your back, and then I'm going to show everybody it says Scott Wells. You know, it's a comical prediction deck, I guess, basically, with this. And then they turn around, then they would say, and you got the prediction, and say, who? Just name somebody and they say Houdini, get a big laugh, you know, like that. And then you say, well, okay, well, it's supposed to have been Scott Wells. So just a minute. And, you know, obviously, like you were talking yesterday in your lecture about magician failure kind of thing, you know, or in trouble syndrome. And then turn around and say, you said Houdini, that's what we delivered. But the point of that story I was going to say is how that people then say, oh, yeah, I know that magician and I can relate to that. And he's one of my favorite magicians also.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything that's genuine and sincere and authentic. They can relate to, and they want to relate to it. You know, they will accept you doing what is material. If you do something and it's clearly a little offbeat and, you know, not really from the heart, but they'll accept that.
Yeah.
But what they really want is that sincerity. And it doesn't mean it has to be emotional.
Yeah.
It just has to be real.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be real.
That's true.
You know?
That's right. I think that they do want the authenticity. No question about that. Your book, again, Stage by Stage, has had just a lot of people like Matt King and others who have said so much about it. What is it in your book that resonates to them?
That's an interesting question. Well, Matt mentioned to me personally that he learned a lot about using music in a show because he said, I don't really use music. And I learned a lot about that. But I think for someone like Matt, who is the best at what he does, I think what he gets out of the book is he might not need that advice or those opinions that I have, but he knows that it's the real advice. It's the real nuts and bolts. Like if somebody says to you, how do I become a great magician? You tell them, well, you have to do a lot of shows. They may think, oh, this guy's blowing me off, but that's what you need to do. So he doesn't need the advice, but he recognizes it as being solid, good advice and good thoughts like
that.
So I think that maybe that's what they... people like Mac would get out of it and respond to from it.
In your book, it explains tricks as well as philosophy and theory, I guess. Isn't that right?
Sure.
In equal parts, or what would you
say?
Yeah,
I'd say about half and half. Because even within the descriptions of the tricks, there are notes on, you know, I say this at this point because this makes it stronger in their memory for later. So that might have not been its own theory chapter, but it's within the description of the tricks. And then there are sections where it is just on theory, as we call it.
When you started writing that to begin with, did it start off like as lecture notes and then it kept expanding or what?
Not really. I kind of, when I always thought about it, it'd be great to write a book, but it was when I realized a format that I thought was intriguing to really start from close up to get a little bit bigger to platform to stage and then about structuring your stage material. So when I had that format, I thought, okay, now I have something I could work on. And it's interesting, you know, you're writing the book and in the very beginning, you're kind of thinking, people are going to read this. Am I going to say the right thing? I want to make sure I say the right thing. And then you forget about that. And then you just write. And you feel like the book is getting good. Mm-hmm. Now you start adding more to it. And you start thinking, now it's getting really good. And then you start editing it.
And taking things out.
And now you think, now it's getting good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're cutting all the times you've repeated yourself or all the unnecessary chapters or entire pages and sections. And you feel like now it's getting good. But your head is still kind of down in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book comes out and you start getting messages from people from all over the world that you've never even met and said, wow, I feel like this book was written just for me.
Really?
This is exactly what I needed. It is really nice and very rewarding and meaningful. And you think, wow, I really have something here.
Right.
You know?
Is this the first publication still?
Yeah, Stage by Stage was the first, very first.
Okay. What I mean is first printing is what I meant.
Oh, no, it's been through like probably three printings at this
point. How many do you print at a time? 1,000?
I don't know, to be honest, and I really don't know because now, unfortunately, Vanishing Ink had the fire at their warehouse.
And so, yeah.
And I don't know how many they had or they got more really quickly. So I don't know if they reprinted it then or if they got them. If they bought them back from Murphy's maybe or something like that. So I don't know. But yeah, it sold incredibly well and incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows you there's a need for this kind of thing.
Do you know about how many that they print at a time?
I think probably 2,000 at a time.
Okay.
I assume.
Just curious.
But don't quote me on it because I don't know for sure.
I mean, I keep tabs of printing all of Banachek's books. That's since I'm the business manager side of that, you know, basically. And so I do the printing and then market it through Penguin as far as them being a jobber on that. But if you turn everything over to Vanishing Ink, you'd say, hey, just send me a check. You know, it's a different way of doing the business as well.
Yeah.
You know?
And I like them and I trust them.
Sure.
And they're phenomenal.
Josh Andy are great. They're phenomenal. Exactly.
They, like we say, they make the most beautiful books. They're also one of the only book publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do care about what they do.
Yeah.
And they want things to be of great quality and they produce beautiful books.
Yeah.
And beautiful product.
Yeah. And the content and everything is really good then too.
Yeah.
Going back to stage, you talked about going from close up then to stand up and more stage. Do you address people who might be interested in doing illusions and doing the grand stage illusion?
Never really got into that, no. But I was very impressed with Rick Wilcox with his video showing how much work he puts into his illusions. So I could appreciate it, but I've never done it. Yeah, amazing.
I just didn't know if that was something that you had gotten into or you kind of, I that used to do illusions also. I mean, you know, Subtrunk. And I mean, I didn't have any more than just my wife who had assisted me or anything, but we did doves and rabbits and everything too.
It's great.
You know?
Yeah. If you have that person that you can rely on like that. I remember years ago, I bought a Kyber Cobra from Collector's Workshop.
Okay, sure.
Which is not an illusion, but it's the snake basket.
Sure.
And the snake comes out with a card in its mouth and it fits into this kind of an ATA case.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this is going to be a great trick in my show, but I'm looking, I'm like, this one trick takes up more space than my entire show.
For one trick.
Yeah. And there's 5 minutes in the show. And I could also get 5 minutes or longer out of the lasso trick, which I can fit into my pocket.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I said, I'm not carrying this to every gig.
I think about that about other grand illusionists. You know, you talk about Rick Wilcox and the video he was showing and how much time and effort and money that it takes, you know, to fine tune that. But moreover, you usually only get about 5 minutes max out of an illusion with spinning it around, showing it empty, and then doing whatever you're going to do with it, and then throwing it off stage, and, you know, with all the extras you're going to have with assistants and whoever else in doing that.
Yeah.
And that is a lot to pack for just 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
You know, and is that going to be the one thing that people are going to remember?
Yeah, it's
going to
be that effective.
Or will they later say, oh my gosh, you know, he made that little birdcage vanish, you know, Blackstone's vanishing birdcage or something, you know?
They probably will. Copperfield mentioned that, you know, when he, Misled was the trick on everybody's mind.
Very good point. Yeah, Timothy Wink thing.
That, yeah, he said, I knocked myself out doing large illusions and the audience walks away talking about the trick with a pencil and a dollar bill. You know, so that was a great endorsement.
Yeah, boy, absolutely, for sure. you have worked a lot and closely with Aussie Wind,
yeah.
And you guys have, which is another book. When I was at Magi Fest, I bought the book Between Friends.
Oh, nice.
Because there was a card trick. You know, a lot of times I'll buy something because there's just one thing in there that,
yeah.
And then I find there are other gems. Obviously, if I have it like that, there are probably going to be other things in it. And that was one of the things that there was a card trick that was amazing. And I think everybody at that convention must have bought one too.
I think
the
so.
The line was
that
like
was
2 hours long.
It was amazing. We weren't ready for that. It was really rewarding and flattering.
Mm-hmm.
What was the trick you liked? The anybody and nobody with the name on the side? Was that the one you?
Yes.
Yeah. That's yeah. Basically, it's similar to Paul Gerner's Unshuffled,
mm-hmm.
The same sort of effect using no pharaohs.
Right. That's what impressed me.
Yeah. Great thinking.
Yeah. Unshuffled without a pharaoh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this person's name on the side instead mm-hmm. of just the word unshuffled.
It's like anybody can do that too.
Yeah. Exactly.
Was that something that you had collaborated with, or is that Aussie's idea?
That's all him.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all him. Mm-hmm. We collaborated. He took my price tag trick, the final sale trick, and
yeah.
added some touches to that for
yep.
his own sake.
I remember that was such a clever idea.
Yeah, and we were never planning on publishing it, but he said, I want to change this. But he was so nice about it too. He said, do you mind if I mm-hmm. suggest something? Like, he was so nice about it. He didn't have to, you know, we could talk to each other so candidly, but he was still genuinely respectful.
I kind of felt like you guys are almost brothers. I mean, from the standpoint
yeah,
of just working together. I mean, just
yeah.
like Banachek and I have with a lot of stuff. You
it's
know?
Great. Yeah. You just have a mm-hmm. synergy and a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been like that for over 20 years.
How'd you meet him to begin with?
I met him at Monday Night Magic in
Did
New
you?
York.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were both kind of doing the show. He was doing close up
mm-hmm.
and I was doing the show. And then he started doing the stage shows too. And, you know, I really do think the world of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just everybody in magic knows Aussie Wind is a great magician.
I mean,
beyond great, like
yeah.
the greatest. And, but I'm so glad to be friends with him because I know him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a great artist, but he's a great person.
Mm-hmm.
Genuine, kind, thoughtful, considerate, compassionate, smart.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you were saying before, I guess, you have an idea, and then he'll say, well, here are 15 more ideas
yeah.
that you could do with that.
And he's a genius with that. I mean, I could tell him an idea, and he'll say, well, you don't want to do that because that's the same mistake that so-and-so made when he went into that routine from doing this routine, and that was too much of this. And it's as if he was thinking about it for a week before you asked him.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was just in the moment.
Yeah.
But his brain, you know, he's on a different level than all of us.
Yeah.
You know?
So are you guys working on any other projects then right now or?
Not together. He's doing a show in London right now at the moment. By the time this comes out,
mm-hmm.
That show will probably be done with and he'll be back in the US. But we have often talked about doing another follow-up to Magic Between Friends, which
mm-hmm.
I would love to do.
Yeah.
Because I like the tricks and I like the format. The book has the discussion between us and you see how the tricks did evolve, the ones that we did collaborate on
mm-hmm.
and what he added and what I added. And we talk about mentorship and friendship and magic and how much that means.
Yeah.
You know, so I would love to do another book like that.
Have you guys gone out and done any other lectures? I mean, a dual lecture like you did at Magi Fest?
No.
That was really fascinating, I thought.
Yeah,
and
I loved
a nice
it.
Structure.
I really enjoyed it. It was a mm-hmm. nice format. Nice of them to bring us in for it too. And, but no, we haven't done anything. I think it's because of schedules. I've only done probably 3 or 4 conventions in my life
mm-hmm.
and probably only 3 or 4 lectures in my life
mm.
because I'm really doing shows for the public.
You're too busy.
Exactly. And I love doing them,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't usually do them. I think the same for Aussie.
Yeah. Well, it just takes time.
Yeah.
As I know, because I've been booking lectures
yeah.
for someone to actually take the time off to go and on a tour
yeah.
Properly, as opposed to doing one-offs, you know, kind
yeah.
of thing. I mean, you can do a one-off anytime and anywhere, I guess.
If you want to.
If you want to.
Make the journey and get there. And
that's
get,
right.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you have to then make a commitment saying, okay, well, I'm going to be on a tour.
Yeah.
But have you done much TV work or anything?
Not much. Years ago, I did some like local TV shows
mm-hmm.
and things like that. Aussie's done way more, you know, Today
Penn
Show,
and Teller.
Kelly Clarkson, Penn and Teller. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His Penn and Teller appearance is one of the most viewed.
I can see why.
Yeah. Phenomenal. And that's something, you know, he discussed that with me as he was working on it and I saw
yeah.
it all come to life.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but I haven't done much on television, but I also haven't tried to do more. I haven't really looked for
not
that.
One of your.
Yeah,
bucket list things.
I'm happy to do it, but I
yeah.
just haven't pursued it,
mm-hmm.
you know, with an active interest.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's you're busy enough doing what you're doing.
Gratefully so.
Yeah. Would you say you were one of those 50 milers? I mean, just kind of mainly working around your general neck of the woods?
Yeah, but more than 50 miles. I live about 2.5 hours from New York.
Okay.
So I will go to New York and I'll go wherever, but I do prefer gigs that I can drive to and drive home from.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a great traveler. I don't love airports. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
You know, they just do it like it's a regular, okay, I have to go to the airport and fly here. I just don't love doing that.
Yeah.
I love being home. I was leaving for a gig, not even traveling. It was just like not even an hour away from my house. As I'm walking out of my house, I look back into the living room as I'm walking out the door and I said to myself, man, I can't wait to get home. Now, I was already home. I didn't even leave yet. And I couldn't wait to get home.
Couldn't wait to get back.
I love being home.
Yeah. 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 Well, whenever I go and work in restaurants and working on a regular basis, and same thing, I'm sure, like in resorts, you almost have to paste on a smile. And because there are some other places you'd rather be and things you'd rather be doing, perhaps. And I think it's a lot like a lot of other workaday jobs that people have, a 9-to-5 type of thing. You just have to put on that smace, pull up your pants and say, I'm going to do this.
That's what we do. Yeah.
But I kind of, as I walked in the door, I would put a smile on and saying, I love everybody who's going to be walking through this door tonight and I'm going to give them a good time.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to put on that attitude when you go in and keep it on till you leave.
That is the job. And like you said, in a restaurant, because a restaurant gig, because you do it every week or a couple times a week, it does feel like a real job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I mean about when you do a show and you feel like, am I really this person that I'm acting like? I'm not the center of attention. I don't need people to applaud. I don't look for people to focus on me. Same thing in a restaurant. I'm sure you've had this. Something in your personal life happens and you're really,
you don't feel like,
exactly. Or you're physically sick even. Mm. And you have one of the best shows of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how that happens, but
you overcompensate. It seems like, and that your body just says, I'm going to put that aside.
Yeah.
And really deliver.
And it's amazing. It's a phenomenon
when that
happens. Yeah.
As we start to close, I do want to kind of wonder if you can kind of give a summary of the insights, the talk that you had given yesterday.
Sure.
Can you kind of go over a little bit, basically, that was, and speaking of that, what I'm saying for those people who are listening, again, we are recording this at the Trix convention, in which Insights, kind of like a TEDx talk. It's just a little 10 or 12 minute thing where people will talk about whatever their specialty is or something that will be some advice in different areas. And you had something that was, I thought, inspirational.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. In the beginning, I talked about, as we mentioned earlier, starting from where you are, using what you already have and doing what you can. So I think that's the first step, the most important step. And starting is the hardest part. Like, if you really haven't done stage shows, but you really want to, start. Because starting gives you your momentum to keep going.
Yeah.
And it's starting that people don't, that's why they say when you begin something, you're already 60% of the way finished.
Good point.
Because starting, that's the hard part. But once you do,
that first step is the hardest step, you know, that journey of 1,000 miles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And then I talked about what I call the 3 P's: planning your show, performing your show, and perfecting your show.
Mm-hmm.
And it always, I didn't mention this quote during because I didn't want to go over time, but I love this quote by Epictetus, which says, no great thing is created suddenly, any more than a bunch of grapes or a fig. If you tell me that you desire a fig, I answer you that there must be time. Let it first blossom, then bear fruit, then ripen. And I think of that all the time when I think about the process of creating a show and building a show. So when you're planning your show, again, use what you already have, use the books that you already have, cull your material, plan for a 45-minute show. Even though that might be longer than you need, it's easier than scrambling to add time. If you develop a 30-minute show and your client really wants a 45-minute show, you don't want to scramble to add something in. It's easier to take something out.
True.
Even though eventually you'll be in the enviable position of saying, I can't take anything out. My whole show works together.
Yeah, you have an A, B, and a C show.
Yeah, and that's a great position to be in. So, and then also, you know, you're planning your show. Where do you begin putting, how do you put the tricks together? Tarbell himself quotes the formula, open and close, and put something interesting in between. So commit to those key spots, the opening and the closing. What's going to be my opening trick? What's going to be my closing trick? You can go back and change it later, but for now, commit so that you can build your show from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to start adding the middle routines in and continuing to build it. And you right. might change it, but you don't want to change it all the time. Eventually, you have to settle in on what's the best of the best and what will become my act.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like even if you took 8 or 10 tricks that have nothing to do with each other and you just started performing them in any order,
mm-hmm.
they would evolve and an order would become apparent. You'd say, oh, this is better after this trick. This trick should not come before that. I should do that right before my closing. Even without trying, these things would happen for your show, I feel like, if you mm-hmm. do it enough. And then perfecting your show. So it's basically a matter of saying, you know, we mentioned flight time, doing your show thousands of times.
Sure.
And I feel like when I do a new piece of magic, I have to do it hundreds of times before I even know if it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. I might do it 100 times and say, okay, this could be something. Yeah.
Yeah.
We might have something here.
Yeah.
And now you do it 1,000 times. Now you know your material well enough. So when you want to perfect your show, the main thing you can do is
just
get
do
that
it.
Flight time. But I also talk about perform, which is the flight time. Think, observe, review, and repeat. So always be thinking about your show. And that way you'll be walking down the street one day. You didn't even know you were thinking about your show. And an idea comes to you. And you think, oh, those two tricks could be in one routine. Or here's, oh, this is a great line for this trick. And that covers that dead moment. Or when I don't have to put the marker back in my case. I could put it into my pocket because I use it again later. So now I don't have to turn away from the audience.
Little like that rope like that. You were doing, saying, okay, I can throw it away over there. And yep. then there's a reason for that. I'll come back and pick it up.
It's there, yeah. That's why I would love to be able to have done my full show here to show all those little moments. But yeah, perform, think, observe, watch your audience. You can tell what people are thinking. But the way they watch you, their eyes. So kind of pay attention to what they think, what they say during the show and maybe even after the show. Somebody might say something to you and say, oh, maybe other people think that same way.
Mm-hmm.
So perform, think, observe, review, record your show. You know, that's the second fastest way to progress, I think, after performing all the time is videotaping your show.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you watch that tape, and it's hard to watch, you know, you start thinking, oh, you're cringing, you're watching, you think people thought, you know, I thought I was good. Oh, it's hard to watch. But it's the thing that will give you the most critical and honest feedback that you will get.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and you also learn things on the video that you would not have learned otherwise
mm-hmm.
because you couldn't see them. Maybe you felt okay gesturing to the right side of the audience with your left arm, but then you watch that arm cross in front of your body on video, and now it just looks abrasive.
Yeah.
And you realize, why don't I just use my
awkward.
Right arm?
Yeah,
why yes.
Not? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it felt right.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know it didn't look right unless you saw it.
Yeah.
I was doing a thing on stage. I was throwing paper balls over the back of my head, but it was a low ceiling.
Okay.
So I was purposely throwing them downward a bit. But when I watched it on video, I was throwing them way downward, like almost from my shoulder to the ground.
Okay.
But it felt right. But I saw it on video. I thought, that looks terrible. I have to throw them a little bit.
A little bit of an arch.
Yeah. Yeah. So you learn things like that from, you know, reviewing.
Video. Mm-hmm.
Perform, think, observe, review, and repeat was the other thing I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Do all those things over and over. Doesn't mean you do them once. It means you just do them over and over again.
Get that flight time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that you can get, it seems hard to get, but it doesn't have to be hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
There might be areas where you live where people go to watch comedians or improv groups or listen to music. And bands often do 20 minutes on, 20 or 40 minutes on, 20 minutes off.
Yep.
You can perform in between sets.
Yeah.
Keep the crowd there. And it doesn't matter what the money is. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter that that audience is not your ideal audience.
Mm-hmm.
Organizations might meet.
Nursing homes.
Nursing,
you know,
exactly.
Retirement communities. Mm-hmm.
And what if there's an organization that's like the young entrepreneur spirit and they have like 15 members come to a meeting and all they do is talk and there's nothing special about the meeting. They don't need to see your magic, but you need to show it to them.
Yeah.
Because you need.
There are a lot of fraternal organizations that have lunches that are looking for something different.
Anything that, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
The money is not important in the beginning.
Yeah.
You really want to just develop your show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, as we do close, I mentioned, of course, that because the name of the podcast is called The Magic Word. So have you thought, what is your magic word?
I have thought about it.
Okay.
And the word I would like to suggest is community.
Wow, good one.
Yeah, I love the magic community.
Mm-hmm.
I love everything about it. And I've always loved magic. And I've always loved the fraternal bond that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But being at a convention like this,
yeah,
is when it really comes to light. Like when you see the kindness in people, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of like great magicians here, but also kind-hearted people.
Yeah.
And it really means a lot to be part of that community. It's not like these magicians are separate from these magicians. We're all a community.
Right.
We can go anywhere in the world to a place you've never been, and you can meet up with people, and you can have a friendly conversation and a session right. with them or whatever it takes.
Right.
And I just really do embrace that community. I feel like such a part of it, being at this convention and meeting people who, when I got here, some people were saying, oh, you're the reason we came to the convention. I said, don't tell me. That's too much pressure. Don't say that. And then so afterward, when they say, it's like, oh, I'm glad you got something out of it. But that's a lot for somebody to say, and you have to live up to that,
yeah.
you know? So
yeah.
it's very flattering. But I really do love the community that we have. It's unique.
Yeah.
It's unique in the world. I'm sure musicians have it. They could talk to each other and talk
sure.
shop. But it's different with us.
It's true that you can go to any country, even though you can't speak the language, but the language of playing cards or tricks mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, is something else that transcends language barriers, certainly.
Yeah, I was in, Arizona many, many years ago, and I didn't really know many people. And I went to a magic shop there, and I'm just kind of looking around the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this. And the owner was holding a deck of cards, and he kind of riffled the edges
yeah.
of the card. And right when I heard that, I felt sort of,
yeah.
okay, I'm in familiar territory now.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
It really is, it's very special. We shouldn't take it for granted, and we shouldn't overlook it.
Yeah.
We should really embrace it.
And look for those opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
And
community.
To be that person for other people who maybe are a little timid or a little shy,
mm-hmm.
we can be a little more open and welcome them in. Like, we love seeing young magicians
exactly.
because you see yourself. Like, here's this kid, he's only 18 or whatever, but he's doing the trick and he's awkward, but his technique is okay. And he's talking a little too much. But you know, you watch that and you're like, that was me.
Yeah. And trying to encourage people to continue yeah. like that.
Yeah. Because yeah. what a great thing. Magic is a gift. To
yeah.
have been bitten by the bug as we have been.
Mm-hmm.
How lucky are we?
Yeah. Just need to pass it on and inoculate other younger people.
Yep.
with that
Absolutely.
Same virus.
Yeah.
there we go.
In a good way.
In a good way. John, thanks very much. Lots of good
it's
advice. A lot of fun. I'm glad
I
you had a
it.
Chance to chat with us. So good word, community. I love that then too.
Thank you so much.
You bet. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Graham. This is Scotty out. Thank you very much, John, for being my guest here this week. And I want to also thank you for being so candid in quite everything that you shared and answering all of the questions and more. I think perhaps to me, some of the best value was where you recapped your lecture and gave the highlights just in the last four or about 5 to 10 minutes of this episode. And for those of you who are listening, you might want to go back there and this time have a pencil and paper with you or just your phone or something. You can type some notes into. Certainly, these are ideas that you do not want to forget. The advice was absolute gold. And I thank you very much, John, for sharing those and giving us a synopsis of that lecture. I might also say for those who are convention organizers or thinking about having someone as a lecturer or performer, I couldn't recommend anyone any higher than I would John Graham. He will definitely be a highlight at your convention. And if you're thinking about booking him for a lecture and he contacts you, please do, because he probably doesn't go out on the road lecturing very often, but oh my gosh, such great stuff. Well, thank you again, John, and I thank all of you for listeners for coming back from week to week and for listening to the podcast. We are soon going to be heading to Blackpool and be giving you some daily updates from there, and then I'm going to be traveling around through the UK, going over to Ireland. So anyhow, that's just kind of a quick sneak preview of kind of what's upcoming. And next week, I've got someone, speaking of the UK, not one, but two different gentlemen who are going to join me from Scotland. So we want to stay tuned for that. I'm not going to expose too much more other than saying that if you subscribe to our pod letter, you will then know who I'm talking about, and you will learn from week to week who is not only on this week, but also you get a sneak preview of who's going to be coming up the following week. Also, when we have contests, you'll be the first to be aware of that by subscribing to the pod letter. Easy to do. When you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there should be a little pop-up that will come on your screen and say, join our pod letter. Please just subscribe. We would love to let you know kind of what's going on. And it's just a weekly newsletter, basically, that I have termed Pod Letter. And it is not really intrusive or anything that's going to clog up your email with the spam account or anything. And I thank all of you who are subscribers already. And if you're not, please do. And for that matter, if you have an opportunity to go to whatever domain or whatever platform you use to listen to these podcasts, please give us a 5-star rating and some nice comments. That certainly helps our podcast grow. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember community, because we are all part of the community. This is Scotty out.